Welcome to the Magic Potion Podcast, where a sprinkle and a dash can enhance your class. Listen to learn about tools, techniques, and stories from educators on ways to improve your lessons, create a positive culture, and much more. I'm your host, Kevin Reinemann, and now it's time to make it happen. Hello and welcome to episode 41. I'm so excited to be back with everybody. It has been a long time coming and I apologize for being gone for so long, but that's okay because we're going to be bringing you a lot of awesome material from here on out on Magic Potion EDU. I'm so excited to have today's guest, Dr. Sam, with me. She and I have been trying to get this thing organized for quite some time. I believe we reached out in about January and we're recording this in December. So we've had plenty of time to think about what we're going to talk about. And well, here we go. Dr. Sam, could you introduce yourself and let the audience know who you are and what your background in education is, please?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, this is a long time coming with this conversation, but I'm so excited that we've reconnected and that we're recording today. Yeah, so my name is Dr. Sam Fesich. I'm a professor of education at Grove City College in Pennsylvania, where I have the honor of teaching and reaching future educators, and I get to teach them in courses related to educational technology and special education. And that kind of goes back to my roots in education. I went to undergrad to be the best first grade teacher ever. I never was a first grade teacher. One day, my dad called me while I was, in college, and he goes, Sam, I think that there's this new program where you can get certified in special ed too. You should do that. And I was like, oh, Dad, no. Of course, I'm 20 years old and I think I know everything at this point. And so, I was like, okay. He was like bugging me for a while about it. I'm like, I'm just going to go to my advisor. I'm just going to add it on, and see what happens. Well, my first field experience in special ed, I was hooked. I knew that special education was in my heart to work with students with all sorts of talents, needs, strengths, and I never looked back. My first job teaching was in a multiple disabilities classroom where we used educational technology to help with independence and daily living skills. It was amazing to see how ed tech and special ed really blended so beautifully together, so well that I decided to get a master's in it, an instructional tech certification, and then later a PhD in learning design and technology with my dissertation focus on assistive technology and augmented reality. So it was so cool. Whenever I was looking for a job after graduation, I had to do a double take and refresh the browser a couple times on Grove City's website to make sure that this truly was my dream job, which was working with faculty and students related to educational technology. And a few years down the road, that position turned into a full faculty position working in the education department in the areas of special education and then also educational technology. It's been an amazing ride, an amazing journey. And yeah, so that's a little bit about what I do. And that's my day job. And I'm also a podcaster. And the Magic EDU kind of really spoke to my heart when I saw your podcast come up. I have a couple of books out, Edgy Magic, A Guide for Pre-Service Teachers, and Edgy Magic Shine On, A Guide for New Teachers. And so this magic and this education, it truly is a magical thing when you become a teacher. It's a beautiful calling and a beautiful career to pursue.
Wow. You've got a lot going on there.
Yeah. Just a little bit. I'm so excited. This is great stuff.
Yeah. And we haven't had a chance to talk for me to fully hear about your background and going from first grade on and then switching gears. And, I've seen for a while there, I'm halfway through year 13 in my career right now. And I've seen job posting after job posting for special education people everywhere. Mm-hmm. And there's a big push. It seemed like when I was in college that everyone should go get their special ed, but then at the same time, people that shouldn't be in it wound up going in there. So it makes me happy to hear how passionate you are about it. Oh, and I think the number one thing for me when I see, if I think of an effective intervention specialist, it's somebody that demonstrates that they care. Mm-hmm. And you can just look at them and you can tell they build that rapport, they build that trust, and they're there to help the students overcome what they have to, you know, fight with themselves essentially to be on the same playing field as everyone else. So thank you for answering that call.
Oh, my pleasure. It truly working with the students with special needs in the multiple disabilities class, that was the most amazing teaching experience I've ever had. I remember walking in the first day. Now, this is my first teaching job. I was probably like 24, maybe 23. And I remember walking in and there were four adults there. All of them were older than me. We had a classroom assistant and three personal care aides, each assigned to three different students. And later there would be a nurse there as well in the classroom. And then seven kids come into the classroom. I remember having this out of body experience where I'm like, okay, where's the teacher? Where are we going to start now? And I'm like, oh, wait a minute. That's me. I should do something. It was like a split second. I was like, all right. And then all that stuff just come, you know, all that methodology and pedagogy just starts and you're just like, let's do this. And you just go for it. And that year we did so much with the interactive whiteboard, adaptive computer mice and keyboards, environmental controls to help students cook and use symbol supports for students to help them read. It was fantastic. I truly, truly loved that teaching experience.
It's all about the growth, isn't it?
Truly, truly. And sometimes growth takes a while. And sometimes it's small steps or baby steps, like Bill Murray says, you know, in What About Bill? But, you know, or What About Bob? Oh, what about Bob? Yeah. Sometimes it takes baby steps, but we get there. We get there. And every piece of growth or every step along the way should be celebrated.
Yeah, for sure. I can remember back to my first day in the classroom when somehow, some way, I was teaching math and computer applications for high school. And my first class was Standard Integrated Math 1, and it was second period. My first period was my planning period. Oh. So my very first day on the job, bell rings to start the school day. And I sit in my room by myself going, what's going on here? There's no kids. So I don't know. I look back at that and it's like, yeah, first period planning period is pretty awesome because you're relaxed to start the day. But man, was that an extra stressor for a first year teacher.
Day, yes.
Prepped and ready to go and all excited. And then it's just flat.
But I'm sure you started to use that prep period as, you know, what it was intended for as oh, things yeah. started to move. And now maybe you were thinking, oh, I wish that prep period is maybe in the middle of the day, you know, get a little snack, work on some grading.
That was always the best, is if your prep period coincides with lunch, so you get that extended lunch time.
Yes.
Chow down really quick, then go do all your planning and everything. Oh, and you know what? Nobody taught me about that in college, but we'll get back.
Yes.
We'll get back to that later on in the
Absolutely.
Episode. Oh, so we've heard your background and everything, and this year has been a far different year than anything we ever could have imagined. Yes. So what drives you? How did you get through that spring semester and then this fall semester now, being that, you know, maybe somebody's listened to this and it's actually like 2025. So we're referring to the COVID-19 yes. pandemic right now in this episode where everything shut down.
Yes.
So how did you handle that spring semester? How'd you handle August coming back and everything?
Yeah. So spring semester, March through about May, it was really stressful being a parent and a teacher, a wife, you know, having all of those worlds kind of collide into one small space was a little crazy at times. But my husband has been a phenomenal supporter, encourager. So I wouldn't be able to do anything without his support. And then my students is really what kept my drive and kept me going. For example, one of my students during the semester at some point, they had mentioned, oh, you know, I'm thinking about getting Google certified. My mom and I, our mom's a teacher and I'm at home now. And so maybe like we could get Google certified together. What do you think about that? And I was like, oh, mother, daughter, Google certification. Yes. But then I was like, I'm making that an assignment. So I took out like a week's worth of content in my class, in my ed tech class. And I was like, okay, we're going to get Google certified this week. If you are a freshman or a sophomore, don't worry about taking the test. Just do the training because it's you need to redo it every 3 years. So just do the 13 module training. If you're a junior or a senior, take the training, and it's encouraged, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, to get that certification. So whenever you're student teaching and whenever you have your that first teaching job or that interview, you have that on your resume because it will look amazing. So long story short, a couple of students got Google certified. All students got Microsoft certified that semester. And that was a learning opportunity to show me flexibility, perseverance, trying something new, and being vulnerable with students, something I've never explored before. So I brought in a colleague of mine who is a Google certified trainer, and she did a virtual lesson for my students, letting them know how to get Google certified, what the trainings were, how to access the trainings and all that stuff, and then how to take the test and what to expect, kind of. And then I worked through, I gave them the info for the Microsoft Education Innovator certification. And they did all of that. And it was just so cool for them to, and then they had to write a reflection about, you know, what they learned about themselves as teachers. And it was just neat to see, like, okay, I thought I knew Google or I thought I knew Microsoft, but whoa, did this course or did this lesson really blow me away? Or I'm excited to try out these new strategies whenever I have a class or whenever I'm student teaching. So the spring semester taught me to be flexible, to persevere, to try new things, be vulnerable with my students. But it also taught me personal things like mental wellness and setting boundaries for my time and everything, and taking care of myself, self-care. Those were three things where I think I grew personally so I can grow professionally.
Awesome. And I can echo those exact sentiments.
I know you're a parent too, and everything just kind of collided into the COVID room, right? The COVID
corner. I have one son. He was in preschool, PK3 at the time, even though he's 4 years old. It was the end of the semester, you know, or the end of the school year. So that was preschool, virtual preschool. It's not good. I don't know.
It does not sound like fun to me.
No.
For anybody.
So luckily this year, knock on wood, I have one day left of the semester at Calvert Catholic Schools. We go to school tomorrow, have an exam. We celebrate Mass together, and then we're off for 2 weeks.
Nice.
We've made it through the first semester. We've done great with wearing masks. We've done great with social distance in our classrooms. Of course, it can always be better, but mm-hmm. we've done really, really well at keeping cases to a minimum. So we've been face to face, and there's a lot of schools all over the place that, you know, they haven't been back since March 13th or March 15th. Whenever mm-hmm. you know what, I think it was March 13th, wasn't it? Friday the 13th.
You know, that sounds right.
At least for Ohio.
Right. Yeah.
That from a parent side of things, that was a whole new ball game. And yes, that's a big reason why, you know, I kind of hit the brakes on my podcast and on mm-hmm. my blog and all that. It's mm-hmm. it was gotta step up and do the dad thing.
Oh, for sure.
So for me, at that time in the spring semester, I was teaching 7th and 8th grade, technology, as well as a freshman technology class, and then also teaching EDU 151 at Tiffin University, which is a freshman level educational technology class.
Sounds familiar.
And that one turned into a lot of Flipgrid. I mean, I was starting the semester. I have a lot of athletes in that class. Mm-hmm. It's just that campus, Tiffin University's campus, is there's tons of athletes there. So rather than, okay, get done with practice and go type a paper,
right,
you can demonstrate to me what you know from our material by telling me.
Right.
So I used Flipgrid and they loved it.
Nice.
Like, okay, I can hammer out a 3-minute Flipgrid as opposed to taking all that time to write a paper. Just say the exact same thing. Save your papers for some other class. Let's just talk about what needs to be talked about. Mm-hmm. But what I found really, really beneficial for my junior high and high school classes were choice boards. Have you ever looked or done anything with choice boards?
Tell me more about that.
Okay. So I picked it up from, you know, it's been around for a while on Twitter and all that other type of stuff. And Casey Bell, Shake Up Learning.
Yes.
That's where she has a bunch of templates and everything there. And I basically took stuff from Chris Woods at Daily STEM. He's got these phenomenal family STEM activities. And I popped them into choice boards. I had a 1 point, a 2 point, and a 5 point choice board. Did them in 2 week rotations. And every week it's like, okay, pick 5 points worth of materials and have it done by Friday. So some of them would be watching a STEM movie. Mm-hmm. Like maybe it was The Iron Giant or Spare Parts or something like that. And that would be worth a lot because that's going to take them quite a bit of time to do. Mm-hmm. Other ones were like, build a fort out of your couch or put stuff in vinegar and document what happens to it and just little things like that.
That's so cool.
Some kids would always go to the 5 pointers, just get it done, hammered out, turn it in with a day, and then they were done for the week. Other ones would do 5 1 pointers. They were easier tasks, but there were more of them. Mm-hmm. So that's something I fell in love with there.
You need to share that, like pass that on in an email to me because I'm going to check out some of those resources. That's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll do that after the show. Yeah, as I turn course. My other of monitor, course. You're like, I can get to it quick. It's on my Twitter.
I know where it is.
But the feedback I got from the students was that they really liked doing that. And I had tried it before as a, hopefully nobody from my Tiffin University classes is listening that might have me in the future. But I do that as an exam for my EDU 251. We cover so many educational technology tools over the semester that the exam turns into, okay, show me you know what you're doing. Uh-huh. And I give them this big Connect Four board where they have to choose four in a line, four vertical, horizontal, diagonal, whatever it is. And it's more of a performance-based thing of show me you know what we actually talked about here. Ready, set, go.
Oh, neat.
So that's... Yeah,
put that in the email too.
And the glory of that is that it changes every single year with the different tools that come out.
Oh my
out.
Gosh, I know. Isn't it crazy? It's hard to keep up with everything.
Yeah, I love the formative assessment stuff. So I've always been a big fan of like Kahoot and quizzes. But GimKit this year, that one's taken a cake for me with my junior high classes mostly. But they just released it's called Trust No One Game. And it's based off of the Among Us craze that's going on right now. So the sixth graders that I'm working on digital citizenship with, they are just eating it up. They want to play that every day. So we cover our material. I make sure to make a question deck that reflects what we learned for that day. And we play Among Us at the end. And they enjoy it quite a bit.
That is really cool. That is really cool. I love that. I'm going to have to give that a try.
Yeah, and they keep it fresh. It's like every month they come out with a new type of game. There was one that was Infinity Mode based off of the Avengers getting all the stones, the Soul Stone, the Time Stone, all those things, and snapping the fingers. And whoever collects all of them and snaps their fingers, half of the class ends up disappearing. So then it becomes this big old thing at the end of who's going to survive the snap.
Oh, no. Oh,
so it's bringing that pop culture in. And I think that's kind of a key piece. You know, we hear people say, meet them where they're at, and give them a great job at doing that exact thing.
Well, I think that's a great point. Meeting students where they are, using tools that they use every day, but using it for educational good.
Yeah. Okay. I distracted myself there.
No, that's okay. Everything okay?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, what are the fun type of tools? Like you're talking about doing the G Suite certification. I was looking at doing that there's actually a student one for high school students.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I looked into that a little bit, and that's what I kind of geared it for. That's why I was teaching with my freshman class this year is, you know, that G Suite, the productivity suite tools. Mm-hmm. But the test is like $35 a person. So that's where I was a little like, we don't really need to do that, but let's cover the material.
Yeah,
end of the day, what's important. So how many students did you end up have getting Google certification?
So this semester I had mostly freshmen and sophomores. So I told them not to do it because they have to get it every 3 years. So just wait till juniors or seniors. So I may have had two this semester do it, because maybe I had two juniors. I can't remember. But I think regardless, if they get that for those freshmen and sophomore, now that they've learned that information, they can now apply it. And then once they're ready to take that certification, they can go for it and just make themselves more marketable. I think it's just a fantastic, fantastic thing to have in your back pocket. And I think that could like really make you stand out as a future teacher whenever you're applying for a job.
Have you taken the level one certified teacher yet?
I have not. I have not. We are a Microsoft school, so I'm more of a Microsoft person. I know we're a few far and in between. but yeah, it's something I definitely want to look into for this summer, getting Google certified level one and two. And I think you can do the two without the one, but I got to make sure about that.
You should take the one. I haven't done two myself yet. I've only done the level one. Mm-hmm. But now that we're sitting here talking about it and I'm thinking about it, it might be worth having your freshman and sophomore take it, actually, because the first time you take the level one, the test is longer. When you do the renewal, you don't have to do all the performance side of things. It's all the multiple choice. Or I might have that flip flop. It's only half as long to do the renewal. So it's
I didn't know that. Okay, well now we have a new assignment for those spring students.
I feel like it's only $10 for level one.
Mm-hmm. It's not expensive at all.
I think mine was I redid mine in 2019. So then I looked at level two. I've looked at being the certified trainer and stuff. It's just I haven't done it yet. Mm-hmm. The Microsoft stuff is getting really appealing to me. Mm-hmm. I've been an Apple guy big, and then getting more into Google. I love Chromebooks and education, especially from the management side with my, being director of technology in a one-man show. So much easier to prep a Chromebook than it is a MacBook or an iPad or anything else. But all the built-in utilities there, I started looking into more of the Microsoft stuff because we really want to have our students prepared, and they should be able to. Most of the tools are all the same. It's just a matter of finding where the formatting tools are at. They all can pretty much do the same thing. Right. I love that Microsoft has moved into the cloud. I didn't realize how established they were until I actually started playing around with them.
Yeah, it's really phenomenal. And the work that they're doing with accessibility is just out of this world. They do amazing stuff to make sure that their content, their products, things that we're putting out there as content creators are accessible for our students to work with. And so they have a really cool tool called Immersive Reader, which is amazing for accessibility. Their Microsoft Edge, it's not your grandma's Internet Explorer. It's a really, really powerful browser option. That has accessibility built right in. It really is a phenomenal, phenomenal resource. So yeah,
it's still not Chrome though.
What?
It's still not Chrome.
No, it's not Chrome. No, it's better. Whoa! I did go there.
Oh man. Well, at least neither of them are Safari. And I'm a huge Apple fan, but I just don't like Safari. I can't do it. I've thought about doing the certification for Microsoft too. So you can't compare them for me, but what was that?
Oh my gosh. So for that class, for that assignment, I had them go into the Microsoft Education Portal, and to get Microsoft certified, you have to take two courses. They last about an hour long and they have assessment at the end. And you have to get 1,000 points to be Microsoft certified educator. And each course is about 500 points. So you take about two hours, you're good to go. What I liked about that one is students got to kind of like choose their own adventure type book. So they got to pick a topic that was of interest to them. So maybe they really enjoyed inclusive learning or formative assessment, or they have Flipgrid certification. They have Wakelet certification, stuff about pedagogy and strategy, teaching online, all sorts of different courses that you can take. So they picked two, just like Panera, and they went in there, they completed their courses, they took their little test at the end, and they reflected upon it in a blog post. And that was their assignment. And they had to take a photo, a screenshot of the badge that they got for each course. They got two badges, one for each course, and they got a third badge for being Microsoft certified. So it's very easy to do. And it just, I really enjoyed that because it was, they were able to, again, choose what topic they enjoyed and reflect upon it. How does it affect their teaching? How do they think it'll affect their teaching whenever they're out there student teaching or in field work? So it really was a cool experience to see them grow in that area.
Was there a cost associated with that one?
No cost. Okay, it is freebie.
Oh, even better. That sounds very similar to the Apple program as well. There's an Apple Teacher, not to be
Tell me more about that.
There's the Apple Distinguished Educator program, which that's its whole different thing. That's the creme de la creme of awesome educators that are putting in an application, submitting video, all that. But that's a whole separate thing. The Apple Teacher program is a series of tests where very similar. You go on there and it's all based off of their applications. So you have to go and pass a handful of them for the MacBook/iMac side of the Mac OS side of things. And then you need to go pass a series of courses on iPad apps as well, or iOS apps, I guess you would say. And it's been a little while since I did it, but it was like, if you pass 8 of them, you become an Apple Teacher, give you a little badge to put on there. And that one's completely free as well.
Oh, nice.
And I think with pre-service teachers, if they're using, like if you see them walk into your room with a MacBook, they can probably do it because they probably have an iPhone too. And they're
nice.
The tests weren't really that difficult, especially with how intuitive the Apple stuff is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all three of these programs that we're talking about, they're helping students who are going to be future teachers use devices that are going to be in front of them. So it doesn't hurt them to go and take these things. Plus, like you said earlier, it's a huge marketing piece for them to be able to go into an interview and say, yeah, look, I'm Apple, Google, and Microsoft certified. Doesn't matter what you hand me, I'm going to be able to do it.
Love that. I'm going to have to add that into my course stuff. Throw in that Apple certification, Apple Teacher, because why not?
Yeah. It's
going to make you a better teacher.
Yeah. And then you never know where you're going to end up and what devices they're going to have. So,
exactly.
So, all right. I'm going to do a little drum roll here.
I'm doing it on my end too.
we are going to bust out a new feature, a new section in the Magic Potion EDU podcast.
Do it.
And I also just noticed that Zencastr has this little timeline footnote thing up there. So as I was doing the drum roll, I clicked on that and it tags the time and you can drop a little note in there. That's handy.
What?
So now when I go to piece this all together, I need to go to that timestamp and then I'll know where to add this in at. So
that's sweet. Awesome.
So what's going to happen here for the listeners? And Dr. Sam is going to be the guinea pig. Thank you.
Because why not?
We talked about the MAGIC acronym, what it means to me, and specifically the Magic Potion EDU side of things, which is similar but different than the EduMagic side. So I'm going to spin a wheel. It's going to land on one of those letters, and she's going to let us know what that means to her. So here we go.
Awesome. I'm rooting for one in particular, but we'll see what the magic wheel says.
Okay, you got A, assessed. And what that means to me is formative assessment and self-reflection. What's it mean to you?
Yes. Oh my gosh. I think those
Was it the one you wanted?
Well, actually, I wanted to stay calm, but you know what? Okay. That's okay. I really like this one too. This is definitely a runner up. And then finding your why. Okay, I like all of them. But anyway, with the assessment, I think having students learn about the different types of assessment. Okay, that's really important. We have formative, we have summative, we have diagnostic, we have benchmark, we have all those types of assessment. But how do we apply those in our classrooms with students in a real learning space? And I think if we think about it, I think formative assessment is probably one that we would use most often. And there's so many technology tools out there that can help us with formative assessment and save us some teacher time. So what I really enjoy about formative assessment is making it easy to see where our students are, what they know, where they're going in their learning journey, and what do we need to reteach, if anything. So some tools that I really like for formative assessment are Pear Deck, Nearpod, Flipgrid's phenomenal, especially for that reflection piece. Padlet, it's an oldie but a goodie. And then also just some simple exit ticket type stuff that you can do with Poll Everywhere or using Microsoft or Google Forms, having them do a quick exit ticket and exit poll. If you're teaching online, doing like a six-word story, give me a six-word story about today's lesson and see, you know, what's landing with that. Well, I got that from a teacher conference called STEM Camp EDU, which is a 1-week camp all about STEM. And that's what they had us do one day. I was like, oh, this is so hard. So it could be like six random words. It could be a sentence. It could be an acronym like magic.
If you do it right, it could be a haiku.
It could be, if you do it right.
It would be really tough.
Challenge accepted. Maybe the listeners heard a six-word story about this episode and send it in. But yeah, I mean, there's so much you can do with formative assessment. And then just paper pencil. Sometimes that just works better. Get a post-it note and everybody write their takeaways, pop it on the door before you leave or whatever that might be. I love having students create a meme about the class. So like there's meme generators that you could use as an exit ticket. So if you could create a meme about today's class, what would it be and have them create that? Or using Jamboard for them to draw a KWL chart or three takeaways or, you know, social media, think, pair, share. Well, we can't really pair right now in virtual learning with the person beside you, but you can think about your response and share it out on Twitter or social. So I think there's so much you can do with formative assessment, but the key points about it is where are my students? Where are they going? What do they already know? What do I need to reteach based on that lesson? And where are those misconceptions? And where are we good to go? And I think those are phenomenal ways to use formative assessment in the classroom. Traditional space, hybrid, virtual, all the things.
Yeah, there's a tool out there for every style that you may or may not be teaching in right now. And yet again, if we go back to maybe somebody's in 2025 listening to this, well, who knows? Maybe we're still in the pandemic at that point. I sure as heck hope not.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Vaccine's coming as we're saying this. The first people in the United States got it.
Yeah, this week, right?
Earlier this week. So one of the things you mentioned in there was Pear Deck. I've completely overlooked that. I mean, how do I want to say that? That came out completely wrong. I did not use Pear Deck until this school year, and by golly, I love it. That's
probably, my gosh. Isn't it amazing?
The things I use daily are Pear Deck and GimKit.
Oh.
I think I could probably cut back on the GimKit, but
I think there's an intervention out there for GimKit.
there's like, we switched to block scheduling this year too. So that's been a tough thing too, to get adjusted to. So it lends itself well to wrapping things up and give them that light at the end of the tunnel where it used to be a 45-minute class. Now it's a 90-minute class. Okay, let's get through it all. So that being said, Pear Deck, good golly. If you use slide decks in your classroom, you're crazy if you're not using Pear Deck because it makes it interactive. Whether you're using all the features or I don't have the premium account myself, but just being able to at your whim click and add in a new question yes. type. There's the KWL chart, I think is one of the ones in there. They have exit ticket stuff.
Oh yeah.
It just pops it on and there they are. They're interacting from their device, from their seat. And the thing I've gotten from feedback from my students is that they don't like raising their hands and this gives them a voice in the classroom.
Absolutely. It does.
Makes me smile.
What I really like about Pear Deck is the SEL components that they have. They have an SEL template where it's like, what's filling your bucket? What's draining your bucket? What's your stress level today on a scale of 0 to 10? And then there's different images to support each of those numbers. And then as the teacher, I love using those templates. So then I can go in after class. I can see where like if my students are super stressed, I can go in and check in with them. Hey, how are you doing? It's like, seriously, how are you doing? How can I be helping you? And we're a faith-based institution. So how can I be praying for you? you, those types of things. And it just does a world of difference just doing those simple check-ins.
And that helps you build a rapport there too.
Absolutely. Them, like, relationships.
We know we care about all of them. And this is a way for you to demonstrate that. Yes, I'm not just saying it to you. I do care about you.
Right.
So that's something I can definitely do better when we come back next semester is looking at that SEL stuff that's built in the Pear Deck. Because, I mean, the first time when you direct your students, okay, here's your Pear Deck code, they get in there, they sign in with their Google account, mm-hmm. and then it pops up there. How are you doing today? Mm-hmm. The red frowny mm-hmm. face, the yellow face, and the green happy face.
Yeah.
So they're pushing that right from the get-go, whether you assign that part or not.
Right.
That information's there for you. So
I like to give them, as soon as they go in, as soon as like they log in and they're just hanging out, wait for everybody to join, I like to have like a blank paper or blank slide there for them to draw on, whatever they want to draw or doodle, you know, as people are waiting. I think GymKit does that before you went, mm-hmm. as you wait for everybody, there's like a blank thing for to draw. I'm like, you know what, that's just good just to draw like whatever you want to draw today.
And they go crazy with it too.
Yeah, and it's just neat. It's just something neat, you know, relaxing, and so we're not just staring at each other awkwardly on a virtual meeting, like waiting for two more friends to join, you know.
Since we're in faith-based institutions, we could totally put on their prayer intentions.
Oh, I love that.
Coming in, I could be like, hey, do you have any prayer intentions? You know, sign in, here's your first thing up there, and then we can pray for those to start off class. Write that one down.
Okay, I'm putting that on my spring list. I love that. Whenever you say prayer intentions, do you mean like prayer requests? Like, how can we be praying for you today? Oh, that's perfect. Yeah. What are your joys and concerns? That's another good one. Like, give me a joy, give me a concern from this week. Oh, we're vibing here. I'm liking this. This is good stuff.
This all down. Oh.
I have a little list, Apple Teacher Certified, Google Level 1, and then prayer requests at the beginning of Pear Deck. Pear Deck and prayers. There we go.
Oh, that's got a nice little ring to it.
It does, right?
Oh, so we talked about the pandemic. We've talked about life in 2020.
About the pandemic. Yes, we have.
We're gearing up for 2021 here in a few short weeks. So let's say you've got a colleague or you're talking to somebody that's teaching in high school, and starting in January is their final semester. They're wrapping it up. They're going to retire.
Yes.
What advice would you have for that person to make sure they don't just coast out and let it go?
Well, first, congratulations. Congratulations for an amazing teaching career and impacting so many students. I think it's really cool. As teachers, we never know where our influence starts and ends. So congratulations on reaching and teaching so many students in your career. I would recommend for these last few months, find a new teacher and work with them. Give them encouragement. Give them support. Let them know that you're there for them and that you can answer questions. You'd be happy to maybe sit in on a lesson and give feedback, or vice versa. Have them sit on one of your lessons, give you feedback, or whatever it might be, because we can all learn from each other. I would say find a first-year teacher or beginning career teacher and maybe, you know, try to take them under your wing, mentor them a little bit, coach them up, and learn from them as well.
Awesome. Then don't be afraid to take risks.
Yeah. I
mean, what are they going to do? Fire you and not invite you back next year?
Exactly.
Don't do anything crazy and over the top, but
yeah, try something new.
Don't be afraid to try GymKit. You know, you might not know what Among Us is, but your kids are going to know what Among Us is. They're going to love it.
Oh, try that. I've changed my advice to that.
Oh, so on the flip side of things, what about those first year teachers? You're working with pre-service teachers,
yes.
And you're telling them, hopefully you're telling them the things that they didn't learn, that you didn't learn in college.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's what the first book is about. Actually, EduMagic, a guide for pre-service teachers, is things I wished I learned in college as an education major and how to really rock your college career as a future teacher. But for the first year teachers, there's EduMagic Shine On, a guide for new teachers, which talks about, it's co-written with three other authors. All, whenever they wrote the book, would have been second year teachers. So they just completed their first year. And my favorite part of that book is talking about Like, we go into the classroom as first year teachers thinking we're going to change the world. You're not going to change the world. You are going to change a student who may be that role to you, who may be, you know, you may be the role to them and they may be the role to you. So in a way, you are changing the world one student at a time. You will have disappointments along the way in your first year teaching career. It's not all rainbow, sunshines, and unicorns. There are disappointments, whether that is an observation didn't go well, something's going on with a student in their home life, something happens to a student, something happens in the community. There will be disappointments, but these are just pit stops along the way in your journey. You do not stay here in these disappointments. We don't stay at pit stops or rest stops. We keep going. And that's what you need to do as a first-year teacher. Keep persevering. Keep going. Everybody has gone through their first year. You will too. Find a mentor and practice self-care. Set those boundaries. Set those boundaries, friends. That is something I wish I learned as a future teacher so I could have practiced in my first year as a first-year educator. Set those boundaries. And if you want to learn more about some of those tips for first-year teachers, definitely check out EduMagic Shine On.
And I'm definitely feeling the letter C stay calm as you're saying that.
Yes.
It's just shining right. It's shining on, actually.
Yes. Woo, look at you.
Yeah. And there's going to be tragedies at your school. Hopefully not in your first year, but at some point in time, something bad is going to happen to somebody that you love or your students love or something. How many years was I in at that point? Five, maybe. We had a teacher die in October. Mm. And it was one of the teachers that taught me when I was in high school. It was a great mentor to me when I began my teaching career. And he died unexpectedly in the beginning of October. And that's, wow. Yep. Mm. There it goes. There's the tears. Mm. It's been 7 years now, and it still has an impact. So stuff like that is going to happen to you and to your school and to your community. There's going to be car accidents. There's going to be people that make poor decisions.
Yes.
Don't take it personal.
Yeah.
I think that's something that we all do is we think that, oh, if I would have done this, if I would have done that.
Yes.
It's not always like that.
Right.
Not always like that.
Right.
Oh, I'm not supposed to get teary-eyed during these things, aren't I?
Sorry, got real for a minute there.
Oh, well, we are rounding the 42-minute mark, which
Holy
is right
moly.
Around. You know, I like to shoot for that 45 minutes, so this is perfect.
Awesome!
High five to us. So,
high five.
Virtual everything nowadays. So, yeah, virtual high five.
Yes.
Looking back on everything that we've talked about this evening, is there anything we missed? Anything you want to let the listeners know? How can they get in touch with you? And also, thank you so much for being on tonight.
Oh my gosh, this was so much fun. Thank you so much for allowing me to be on and sharing with the Magic Potion EDU listeners. Last piece of advice, let me see. First, I think it's just going to be a thank you. Thank you for choosing to be an educator. Thank you for choosing to be an educator of excellence each day and showing up for your students. As teachers, we must show up for our students and just keep persevering, keep building those relationships, and just being there for our students is so much, means so much to them. And I just want to thank you for doing that. To get in touch with me, you can find me over on Instagram and Twitter. I'm at sfecich, that's sfecich. And you can also check out my site, sfecich.com. And I have a podcast too, the Edgy Magic Podcast. So just switch a couple of those letters in this one and you'll be good to go. You can find it wherever you listen to shows. And I just want to thank you so much for your time today. It's been a lot of fun chatting. Thank you.
Yes, it's 12 months or 11 months in the making. And it was well worth it.
Absolutely.
You know, I missed having these conversations and recording these episodes. So thank you so much for being on tonight. And Magic Potion EDU listeners, just like we say at the end of everyone, now it's your turn to go out there and make it happen. We'll see ya. Thank you for listening to the Magic Potion Podcast. This podcast was created using Anchor FM. Please subscribe and leave comments with your thoughts and ideas from the classroom.
Until next time, get out there and make it happen.